giving knowledge that is better than what I have already explained. Now, of course, you may wonder, what will Krishna say? I'm going to give you knowledge better, but he's already talked about devotional service, so how can he give anything better than that? So he's talking about better in a certain context. It's more in the context of understanding Krishna, knowledge in that sense. Not directly about devotion, but more about what we say, what we call as jnana. Jnana means knowledge. So knowledge about God. So this chapter is called The Opulence of the Absolute. And there's a whole list later in this chapter, I won't be covering those, where Krishna says that of this I am that, and of this I am that. He talks about many of the phenomena of the material world, and he says how they represent him. So these are the opulences, especially, that are referred to in the title. But there are four verses, verses 8 through 11, that we call the nutshell verses of the Bhagavatam. I just happened to do a search looking for this term, nutshell, and I see that Prabhupada himself never used it, actually. He used the word a lot, but not specifically in reference to these verses. In fact, he would sometimes say that the Bhagavad Gita contains all knowledge in a nutshell. The whole book itself is a nutshell of the Vedic knowledge. And he used the word specifically in relationship to the four verses of the Bhagavatam that are called nutshell verses. In fact, just after they occur, in the ninth chapter of the second canto, Prabhupada in one purport refers to them specifically as the nutshell verses of the Bhagavatam. But many of the Vaishnav commentators on the Bhagavad Gita have pointed to these four verses as containing the essence of Krishna's instructions in the Bhagavad Gita. So I want to go through those, and then they also establish the context for some things that Krishna says just after that. I find it's important often to look at verses and see the flow of them and try to understand not just one thought in one verse at a time, but see how they fit together and how Krishna's carrying on a conversation, obviously. So it's nice to follow along with what he's saying. So the first of these verses, text number 8, I'll just read the English. He says, I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. This is one of the verses that Prabhupada will often quote to establish that Krishna is revealing himself as God, as the Supreme Absolute Truth, as the source of everything. There are several places in Bhagavad Gita where it's clear that Krishna is God. He's the source of everything. This is one of those. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo. He's saying, everything comes from me. Now, people today, they have many different understandings of what does it mean, God? The word is thrown out there. People say, I don't believe in God. And sometimes you can ask them, well, what do you mean by that anyway? Because there are a lot of ways to define, and people have a lot of different ideas. But generally, of course, people think some transcendent entity who's above everything and controlling everything. So in the Vedic literature, we have this succinct definition of one definition of God is that he's the source of everything. Everything comes from him. I don't think this is necessarily clear in other spiritual or religious traditions. They may not necessarily think of it that way. They may think, well, God exists. And yes, he created. Of course, in the Bible, that's there. But in other ways, sometimes it's not something that's thought about necessarily. And we think of it very distinctively, that God exists like the sun, and just as the sun gives off energy, then everything comes from God in that way. It emanates from him. So Krishna says here, I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. So that means everything. There's a spiritual reality, and there's a material reality, a material world that we're part of now. So Krishna says, I'm the source of both of those. Everything emanates from me, which is more or less a rephrasing of the same idea. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So in the Sanskrit here, it says, Buddha Bhava Samanvita. So Buddha means intelligence or understanding. How is it translated here? Or the learned, the people who have intelligence, you could say the learned. So when somebody understands, that Krishna is God, then they worship him. Bhava. What is this? It's bhava samanvita, with great attention. Before that, bhajante mam. They worship me with great attention. Those who are buddha, those who are enlightened. This is what it means to be enlightened. It means that you understand that Krishna is the source of everything. And you don't have to get there by guessing, by speculation. But he's saying it, he's revealing it. And it's revealed in many different ways, in Bhagavad Gita and in other places. So if you accept that, actually Krishna says, those who perfectly know this. So it requires more than just theoretical knowledge, but there has to be some realization of it. And that also, we'll see that Krishna says how that comes, actually. And then the next verse, Krishna says, then he's saying, if you understand that I am God, then you'll worship me with all your heart. And then he says, the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me, their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. So now he says something about those buddha who worship those enlightened persons. What do they do once they've reached that stage of enlightenment, when they appreciate Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead and engage in his service with all their hearts? So this is what they like to do with their time. They, first of all, they're always thinking of Krishna. The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. This is a very important point, actually. Many people will claim to be godly or religious. Even we devotees. Yes, I'm a Hare Krishna devotee. But where are my thoughts? Are my thoughts engaged in Krishna? You have to prove it. Put your money where your mouth is. Put your thoughts with what you say. If you say you're a devotee, but what are you thinking of? What are your thoughts about? What are your desires? What do you want? What do you want out of life? We often talk about, I think of this often, devotees, of course, we want to go back to Godhead. That we think of going back to Krishna, Krishna's land, Krishna's, that where we're from, back to our home, back to Godhead. But do we really want to go there? Actually, that's what it requires. We have to really want to go there. Because Krishna is perfectly fair. He gives us just what we want. If we sort of want to go there, then we sort of won't get there. We're going to sort of stay right here. We can't be wishy. We have to really want to go there. Tattaloyam api mulamekalam janma koti sukrite na labhyate. This verse, I think, is in the Padyavali, which is a collection of verses by Rupa Goswami. It says that Krishna consciousness, Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita mati. That's Krishna consciousness. That all those words together, you can say, means Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita mati. To have your consciousness in Krishna rasa, the taste of Krishna, the mellow of Krishna consciousness. How do you get that? How do you get there? Lowlyam, you have to just want it somehow. The end of the verse says, and it may not come for a long time, many, many lifetimes. Janma koti sukrite nalabhyate. Now this sukriti, as far as I understand in this verse, sukriti means pious activities. So it means ordinary kinds of piety, giving in charity. And in the Vedas they have many things, like you plant shade trees and you dig wells and so many different things you can do like that. So that's not necessarily going to get you that loyam, that desire to get Krishna. So that we're trying to cultivate that by the practices that Prabhupada gave us in Krishna consciousness. So it's really what it's all about. I think this way, why am I not with Krishna? Well, I don't want to bad enough yet. That's the problem. There's still lots of things I want here. Still desires that I feel somehow materially unfulfilled, and I need something else. So of course, by the practice of Krishna consciousness, by chanting Hare Krishna, doing the things under Srila Prabhupada's guidance, all the practices of bhakti yoga, our desire is being nurtured. Our desire to really want Krishna is being nurtured. So here it says, the thoughts of my pure devotees, dwell in me. They're always thinking of Krishna. They can only think of Krishna. Their lives are fully devoted to my service. And they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me. So the devotees who are advanced in Krishna consciousness, in devotion to Krishna, they love to talk about Krishna. Comes out spontaneously. Of course, we have the perfect example of that in Srila Prabhupada. How we have millions of words that he spoke and wrote in glorification of Krishna. Because he had to. Sometimes you're excited about something, so you have to go, I got to tell somebody about this. So Prabhupada was always like that. I have to tell someone about this. Actually, many of us, when we discover Krishna consciousness, I need to tell my best friend or my wife or whatever. Some, of course, what we often find is they're not so excited as we are. We don't always get the same response. Of course, Srila Prabhupada was undaunted. No matter how receptive his audience was or not receptive, he kept on speaking. Of course, his spiritual master said, even if no one is there to listen, you speak to the four walls. It's quite amazing, actually, when Srila Prabhupada was first here in New York and he was all by himself. Of course, he was with Krishna and his guru, as he said. But from our perspective, he was alone. So right from the beginning, somebody started coming, Robert, was that his name? And he got him to buy him a tape recorder. So right away, Prabhupada started recording things. He had to speak, even there was nobody there to speak to. So he was speaking into a tape recording. He was recording. One of the very first things Prabhupada recorded was his introduction to Gita Upanishad, his introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. That's still there. You can hear him. That's available through the Bhaktivedanta archives in their audio ministry. Because he had to speak, he was just looking for someone to speak to. So naturally it comes out, the devotees want to speak. And this is, of course, this is devotional service. Sadhu Sangha, it's one of the most important aspects of devotional service, is that we have to come together in a congregation. Sankirtan, we glorify Krishna together, Sankirtan, congregationally. We chant together, congregationally. We hear about Krishna together. And we discuss about Krishna, and that's enlivening. Here it says, Tushyanti cha ramanti cha. Tushyanti, they find nothing more pleasing than that, talking about Krishna and hearing about Krishna, the pure devotees. And we ourselves, hopefully, to some degree, like to hear about Krishna. And what does it say? Ramanti. So, ramante yogino nante satyananda chiratmani. Rama, means transcendental pleasure. So speaking about Krishna brings transcendental pleasure. As mentioned in the Bhagavatam, the person who's speaking gets benefit, transcendental pleasure. The person who's directly hearing, just like the Bhagavatam, you have Shukadev speaking to Parikshit Maharaj. So they're both getting benefit. And then all those who are hearing also, the bystanders, they're also getting benefited by this. And ramanti, they get transcendental pleasure from it. So this is the second point Krishna makes here in these nutshell verses. First, we become Krishna's devotees, and then we like to talk about Krishna. We come together, and the pure devotees especially, they're always doing that, always talking about Krishna. Then the next verse, to those who are constantly devoted in serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Now, one thing that this makes me think, we're talking in the previous verse, the one I read just before this, we're talking about pure devotees. Well, there are different levels of pure devotees. You become a pure devotee of Krishna and you keep going from there, it doesn't stop. Your purity, in one sense you're pure, you're purely devoted to Krishna, but your realization increases and deepens. It grows and grows and grows unlimitedly. It's always increasing because Krishna's always increasing. And Krishna is multifaceted. There's a nice verse in the ninth canto. The ninth canto, there's a lot of genealogy in the ninth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And one of those lines of families, of kings, leads up to Krishna. And towards, I think it's the last chapter of the ninth canto. fact, I think the title of the chapter is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when Krishna comes out, because a lot of times in these, in fact, you'll see this, I'll just mention this, the structure of the Bhagavatam is a lot of genealogy. You hear about the descent of different kings, their families. And what happens along the way is when the hearer hears something interesting, then he says, can you tell me a little bit more about that? This Maharaj Gaya you just mentioned, what was that about? You said something about him. Why did that happen? And so on. So then you get all these different stories that come out throughout the Bhagavatam. But a lot of times, things are just mentioned, or personalities are mentioned, even incarnations of God are mentioned with hardly anything said about them, just a few words or a couple of verses. But when Krishna's name comes up in the ninth canto, then there are several verses there. And then, of course, then we have the whole tenth canto. Because what Sukadeva Goswami, or Pariksit Maharaj, he says, ah, now I want to hear about Krishna. And he says, I want to hear about Krishna in detail. Don't just, you know, gloss over Krishna. I want to hear in detail. So that's the tenth canto. It's 90 chapters. That's a lot. So there's one verse in this ninth, in the ninth canto where Krishna is, when he comes up in the genealogy, Yasyananam makarakundala charukana braja kapola subagam suvilasa hasam nityotsavam. So nityotsavam means, it's talking about how beautiful Krishna's face is. And one of the things in describing the beauty, it says that Krishna is like a festival. So you think when you're looking at somebody's face, well, not much happening there. It's just nose, two eyes, mouth. How can it be? But Krishna's face is like a festival. It's like if you go to a festival, then there's this happening here and this happening here. Just like we have Janmashtami, we have a Vrindavan village, a kirtan here, prasadam over there, something on the stage. There's all this variety going on. So when the pure devotee in love with Krishna sees Krishna's face, it doesn't get boring. It's like a festival. Nityotsavam. It's always an eternal festival, even just Krishna's face. It's not static. It's ecstatic. And looking at Krishna's face brings ecstasy. The reason I said this was that Krishna consciousness is always new. Nava nava rasa. Also Yamunacharya, one of his verses, he says, Krishna consciousness, I get a newer and newer taste at every moment. So here it's saying that by being constantly devoted to Krishna, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. So you might think, well, if you're already a pure devotee, why do you need some more understanding? You already know everything. But you can be purely devoted to Krishna and still progressing. And of course, you may still be in this material world, and you want to go back to Krishna. So when you're purely devoted or purely surrendered to Krishna, he'll tell you how to do that. He'll give you the secrets. He'll guide you from within and without, of course. There's so many ways that we get guidance. Especially our three ways of getting guidance are sadhu, shastra, and guru. These things. These are the pillars, the pillars of our faith. I often think of this. Because, you know, there may be many challenges, and maybe people come up with, you know, why is God like this or that? So why do we believe what we do? Well, this is why we believe, when you get right down to it. Sadhu, shastra, and guru. Especially Guru Srila Prabhupada. Because of Prabhupada, he's the one that let us in the door, brought us into the party, chaperoned, brought us in, escorted us. And then we get to meet all these amazing people, the six Goswamis. And I often think of this. In fact, Prabhupada, he gives this nice example. He says, chanting Hare Krishna is like, the Maha Mantra is like a code. You know, in code breaking, if you figure out what the code is, maybe the numbers 1 to 10, they mean different things. So if you could just figure that out, then the whole language opens up to you. So if you can crack the code of the Maha Mantra, then the whole spiritual world opens up to you. So Krishna consciousness is like that. Krishna is giving us the code. This is what he's saying here. I'll give you the code. I'll give you the secret so you can get in. So I often think how, because Prabhupada let us in, he knew the code on the door. These days we use codes to get into our cars and our houses and everything else. So then look at all the amazing people you meet there. All of this whole world opened up to us because of the contact with Guru, because of Prabhupada. There was a whole world we didn't know anything about. There was a few years ago, I remember when, I think it was Dick Cheney, was he the Secretary of Defense, I think, or Secretary of State, one of these things. Anyway, he made some statement that the press laughed at him, because he said that there are known unknowns and unknown unknowns in military and intelligence, trying to find out things about, you know, what's going on, what our enemies are doing, and so on. But the statement actually does make sense. There are things that we don't know that we don't know that we don't know them, right? There was this whole world there, which is the real world, and we didn't even know that we didn't know anything about it. It was there, but we didn't even know we were missing it. So Prabhupada said, look over here. Check this out. Read about it here. I'm revealing it to you. So Krishna reveals, and then of course he reveals according to our desire. Again, it's about desire, need, and want. Do we want to know? Do we want to know more about Krishna? We make this argument to those who say, well, I'm happy and I'm satisfied with my religion and my understanding of God. But we say, but wouldn't you like to learn more? And of course, what we have in our books is intimate details. You kind of, generally people, they know what God is like at work. Like the judge, they kind of, the judge in his robes and so on. But they don't know what he's like at home, what he does, rolling around on the rug with his kids or grandkids or whatever, and you know, his intimate domestic life. We know about God's domestic life. They know about his official life, but they don't know anything about, they don't think he has a domestic life. But we know he's got an amazing domestic life. He's got a city life and he has a rural life too. The rich people, they like that. They have their helicopters and other. They live out on the end of Long Island or something in some retreat, and then they fly into the city on top of some big building in Manhattan. You know. So they have that life there, executive, the CEO life there. But then they have this rustic rural life out in the country where the birds are singing and all these things. So God also, he has. And he, of course, he likes being, like most people do, they'd rather be at home in the city. So Krishna, but nobody knows anything about that, and they don't know that they don't know. So Prabhupada introduced us to that. He told, no, here, look, there's this other world. I'll tell you about it. So Krishna says that those who are devoted, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. Then the next verse, I've always felt is, it kind of just follows on, and it says, to show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So again, Krishna says, I enlighten them to give them special mercy. And this, of course, is an extremely important point. Why is Krishna giving special mercy? Why does? Because they're devoted to him. That's why. Because they want it. Those who want it the most, they're the ones that get reciprocation from Krishna. You're just nonchalant about it, and it's, all right, whatever, if it comes, okay. Then God doesn't, he's not so eager. Yayatamam papajyante tang stataiva bhajamyaham. Krishna says in the fourth chapter, I respond according to how you approach me. So that's just natural, Prabhupada would say. It's not bias or favoritism, it's just natural. It's a natural response. So Krishna does that. So of course, what happens after Krishna speaks these four nutshell verses, then what does Arjuna say? Now it's Arjuna's turn to speak. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Param Bhavan. Then Arjuna says, now this is important because, of course, Prabhupada makes this point, I think, in the purport here, that we should follow Arjuna's example. So Arjuna says, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ultimate abode, the purest, the absolute truth. You are the eternal, transcendental, original person, the unborn, the greatest. All the great sages such as Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyas confirm this truth about you. Now you yourself are declaring it to me. So Arjuna is concurring with what Krishna's just said, I'm God, basically. And Arjuna is saying, yes, you are. And not only do you say so, but these great spiritual authorities. Now, Sita and Devala, we may not hear about so much. But Narada and Vyas, we certainly hear a lot about, especially in the Bhagavatam. I've often remarked how Narada, he pops up everywhere. He's practically in every episode in the Bhagavatam. You go, he's always there somewhere. Sometimes he plays just a little role, but you know, I could go on. There's so many places. You go, just go through the Bhagavatam. Oh, there's Narada again. Oh, there's Narada again. There's Narada. He's all over the place. And when people tend to find things out, it's almost always because Narada told them. He's really a transcendental messenger carrying word. And of course, he's a catalyst for Krishna's pastimes. That's one of the things he does. And in some ways, he's a bit of a troublemaker, too, sometimes. Like he goaded Kamsa. Said, listen, you know, the Yadu dynasty, they're all demigods that come down, they're your enemies. And then maybe told him about Krishna. You think, why is Narada doing that? He's squealing on Krishna, and Krishna's hiding in Vrindavan. Why? Because he wanted Krishna to kill Kamsa and get rid of the guy. So he knew if he told Kamsa about Krishna, then things would happen. Anyway, so Narada is a great authority. He's a great authority on Krishna. And he gets to see amazing things. He went to Dwarka and saw Krishna. He went to every one of Krishna's palaces. 16,108 of them. And in every one of them, Krishna was doing different things. And some places it was even a different season, and different festivals were going on. He was getting children married in one, and the grandchildren were visiting in another house. All these things are going on. All these different palaces. So he's seen a lot. He knows a lot. So Narada certainly, he confirms that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Vyasadeva, who edited all the Vedic literature, and also wrote so many things, so many Puranas he wrote, and especially the Bhagavad Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam. So they're great authorities. So then I just want to read a couple more verses, just the translations here. So then it says, then Arjuna, he continues, O Krishna, I totally accept as truth all that you have told me. Neither the demigods nor the demons, O Lord, can understand your personality. So this, of course, is very important. This is Arjuna. So here, Arjuna, Prabhupada would call him the ideal student of Bhagavad Gita. If you want to be a student, many people, so many thousands, millions of people, they want to study Bhagavad Gita. They've heard that this great work has been around for thousands of years. I was thinking, you know, they have this expression, people have a bucket list, what they want to do before they kick the bucket, before they die, their bucket list. So this should be on everybody's bucket list, to read Bhagavad Gita. Of course, they should be on their bucket list, should become a devotee of Krishna, but at least this book, of all the books of world literature, if you haven't read Bhagavad Gita, specifically Bhagavad Gita as it is, then, you know, half of your life, well, your life is wasted. You need to read this book. So many people are, of course, reading it, and throughout history many people have read it. But how are they following in the footsteps of Arjuna? Sarvam eta vritam manye yanmam bhadashikeshava. I totally accept as truth everything you're saying, Krishna. I'm not going to argue with you. The Prabhupada raises the point. If you don't accept Krishna's words as authoritative, then why are you giving any credence? Why are you reading Bhagavad Gita? Krishna is saying that he's God. If he's not God, then he must be a madman. So why are you reading his book? If you accept Krishna as some kind of authority, then you have to accept when he's saying that he's God. And you also accepting it as Arjuna did. So finally, I just want to read this last verse. Originally, I was going to speak on this verse, but then I said, well, let me backtrack a little bit. So I ended up stuck in the back there. Worked my way back up to this. Anyway, this is the verse. This is number 15. Now this is a very interesting purport to this verse. Maybe I'll just read this one little section of the purport, but here's the verse. Indeed, you alone know yourself by your own internal potency, O Supreme Person, origin of all, Lord of all beings, God of gods, Lord of the universe. So I'm just going to skip ahead. I'm just going to read towards the end of this purport. Now you'll notice here that Arjuna addresses Krishna with several different names here. Purushottamam Bhuta Bhavana Bhutesha Deva Deva Jagatpate. So here, this is how Prabhupada explains it. And I noticed that our Vaishnava Acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Baladeva Jabhushan, they also talk about this in this way. So it says here, Prabhupada says, Sometimes the impersonalists accept Krishna as Bhagavan, or they accept his authority. Yet many liberated persons cannot understand Krishna as Purushottama, the Supreme Person. Therefore, Arjuna addresses him as Purushottama. Yet one still may not understand that Krishna is the father of all living entities. Therefore, Arjuna addresses him as Bhuta Bhavana. That's what that means. Actually, it's translated here as the Lord, origin of everything. Bhuta. Generally, Bhuta means the living entities. Bhavana means the source. And if one comes to know him as the father of all living entities, still one may not know him as the supreme controller. Therefore, he is addressed here as Bhutesha, the supreme controller of everyone. And if one knows Krishna as the supreme controller of all living entities, still one may not know that he is the origin of all the demigods. Therefore, he is addressed herein as Deva Deva, the worshipful god of all demigods. And we're not done yet. And even if one knows him as the worshipful god of all demigods, one may not know that he is the supreme proprietor of everything. Therefore, he is addressed as Jagatpati. Thus, the truth about Krishna is established in this verse by the realization of Arjuna. And we should follow in the footsteps of Arjuna to understand Krishna as he is. So anyone like to ask anything? Any discussion? Yes. There's a microphone there.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for the wonderful lecture. So in comparing these two verses, what Krishna says, I am the source of everything and everything emanates from me. And those who know this perfectly then worship me with all their heart. And the other verse where those who devote themselves to me with love, I give them the understanding. It seems that in the first verse, you first get the gyan, you first get the knowledge perfectly of who Krishna is or what Krishna is, and then you give your heart, then you give your bhakti. And then in the second verse, it seems that you get the bhakti first, you get the love first, and then Krishna gives you the gyan, the understanding. And then there's also the verse where Krishna says that those who dedicate themselves to one of this path attains the results of both. So is gyan better than bhakti? Is bhakti better than gyan? Or are they just connected? Or is this oneness?
We have to understand there's different types of gyan. Gyan just means knowledge in one sense. In fact, another meaning of gyan is that by which one attains something. So bhakti is also gyan, in a sense, because bhakti you get Krishna. And ordinary gyan, just gyan is theoretical knowledge. We also have the term vijnana. The prefix v is a specifier. It means a specific or a particular kind of gyana. So that it's particular in different ways. So one way that gyan becomes vijnana is that theoretical knowledge becomes particularized when it's realized knowledge. So that jnana of understanding, so you can get some, actually as you were going over these verses, I was thinking, yes, you can get some knowledge of Krishna and you start worshiping Krishna, but that's not the end. And as a result of that worship, then you get realization of Krishna. So that you can, when you apply the theoretical knowledge, then you get realization. And then just the idea that, you know, jnana can mean many things. There are all kinds of jnana. Even jnana or vidya, a synonym is vidya. So there's jada vidya. Jada means like dull, material knowledge. So material knowledge is also sometimes called jnana. But generally speaking, we think of jnana as, of course, the path of jnana is about speculation. But we can apply, we want to know about Krishna. It's not that we don't like jnana, that we reject jnana, but we reject the path of jnana, which is a kind of approach to Krishna by your own philosophical strength. You try to understand Krishna, but that's not the way to understand Krishna. You can understand Krishna, you can get jnana. In fact, Krishna says, even in the beginning of the 7th chapter, says you can know me in full, free from doubt. Sanshaya. Because generally people say, there's no way to really know. You find this everywhere. This always comes up. You can never know for sure. Right? You can never know for sure. But why not? If God can make you know for sure. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, if you follow what I tell you to do, what I tell you to do, and you're going to know free from doubt. You're not going to have any more doubts. So that's really the gyan we're talking about. We're not talking about just speculating on God or some theoretical understanding. And that this other approach, as we know, it only takes you so far. In fact, we see this, I often think of this. Many, you may know that scientists, there are many scientists, they end up with a kind of gyan where they see the oneness of everything. So why, you know, it's almost like they've come to Brahman realization. But that's as far as they're going to go. So they're, you know, they have big, big brains, but that's as far as it takes them. It's not going to take them to Krishna's lotus feet. The Brahma Samhita tells us that. It says you can travel at the speed of the mind for millions and millions of lifetimes, and you're never going to get a glimpse of the rays from Krishna's toenails. You're just not going to get close to Krishna with the speed of your mind for millions of lifetimes. Pantastuko tichata vatsara sampargana. So that we're not talking about that kind of jnana. We're talking about really understanding Krishna. So that's what Krishna's talking about here. I'll reveal myself to you. You'll be able to understand me. Of course, we can never understand Krishna in full. That's not possible. But as much as we need, we'll be full. Our container will be full, and we'll be fully satisfied. Ananda Prabhu.
Prabhu, what you're talking about and what he's asking reminds me of the nectar devotion in the 14th chapter, the first paragraph, where Prabhupada says some scholars, they recommend that knowledge, gyan, and renunciation, tyaga, is an important part of Krishna consciousness, but he says actually this is not a fact. He says although they may be come to be accepted to gain a foothold in Krishna consciousness, they may ultimately come to be rejected. And Prabhupada says, because Krishna consciousness, it depends on nothing more than the desire or the sincerity. And then in the next paragraph, it explains that these two things, too much jnana, too much tyaga, they actually make one's heart harder and harder. That they're not integral parts of pure devotional service. When they talk about unalloyed devotional service, they're talking about free from jnana, free from tyaga, free from those other yoga processes, and you're just engaging in the ninefold process of loving Krishna, praying, and like that, free from those other things. I hope that was
so he's asking, it said, the verse says, those who perfectly know me worship me with all their hearts. So now perfectly, we can also say that can also be theoretical in a sense. Perfectly, they don't have some misconceptions about Krishna. They're accepting as Krishna is presenting himself. So in that sense, we know perfectly. We know perfectly as we hear from Prabhupada. We know, for example, that we know what color Krishna is. We know that Krishna wears a peacock feather and plays a flute, and these kinds of, we know he doesn't play the trombone, or so we know perfectly which instrument he plays, and there's so many things you can say. We know these details about Krishna, but we haven't realized him yet, so that comes. Now the other, of course, Mahananda, this whole topic of jnana is a very big thing. As he was speaking, I was thinking, there comes a stage, we know the residents of Vrindavan, jnana also means that you understand that Krishna is God. So we don't want that in Mother Yashoda. She doesn't want to know that Krishna is God. In fact, she started thinking philosophically when she saw the universal form in Krishna's mouth. So she started thinking like a philosopher. Oh, actually, I'm thinking that I'm the wife and Nanda Maharaj is my husband and these are my children and these are the people of the village and so on. I live in Vrindavan. She started, and she said, I know this is just all Maya because, just like the way we would think, I'm not really this body. She was kind of thinking like that. So the danger, so she was thinking like jnana, and then Krishna took it away, and then Krishna was her baby again. And just, so there's a level where there is no jnana. I mean, it's a kind of jnana because they know Krishna's, that's real jnana. Krishna's my son. That's the real jnana. It really matters, ultimately. So it's a big word. It can be spoken. You can talk about the path of jnana and jnana yoga. And there's jnana, which is an aspect of bhakti. And what Prabhupada is talking about when he's disparaging it in the Nectar of Devotion is that this path of, you know, philosophical, that you really think you have to figure everything out with your mind. I know I have this tendency that I want to understand everything on a certain intellectual level. But sometimes that's really difficult. We have to understand that Krishna is achintya, he's inconceivable. There are things about him we're not going to understand. We're not going to, at least in our conditioned state. In our liberated state, that's another thing, but in our conditioned state. So the jnanis, they can't penetrate the curtain of Maya with their, because they're in Maya. So how can they? This Prabhupada would make this argument. The Mayavadis, they say everything is Maya, everyone is in Maya, but they're in their Maya, they want to speculate their way out of it. You can't. You're in Maya yourself. You need the pure devotee to come and liberate you and open the curtain. Just like when the curtains are closed, we don't see Krishna. But then Pujari opens the curtain and Krishna is revealed. So that's what we want to see. So too much speculation can harden the heart. Too much intellectualizing. So we hear submissive oral reception. You hear from the pure devotees. You get knowledge that way and your heart gets purified so that you can actually understand and realize the knowledge at the same time. Yes, over here on the lady's side.
Hi, Krishna Prabhu. Thank you. I have a different question. It's you were talking about how in the Bhagavatam there's many places where they list these long genealogical tables. So I was thinking that, you know, the situation where Maharaj Pariksit has 7 days left to live. He wants to, you know, perfect his life, go back to Godhead. And so, you know, what is the value?
Why?
I mean, you would think that Shukadeva Goswami would be really prioritizing, you know, what he's giving, that only telling him. And also because Maharaj Pariksit was a king himself with a family, and he's trying to forget about that, and now he's bringing up all these other kings and all their families. So how is that helping him go back to Godhead?
There's something mysterious about the Bhagavatam, which I study a lot, and I listen to it a lot. I've recorded the translations up through some chapters of the 10th canto, so I listen to it a lot. So I get a lot, I follow along with the story and I know how it all goes, just the translations. And a lot of times I think, why is this in the Bhagavatam? So I always feel there's something mysterious going on. We have to take it from the authorities that our hearts are becoming purified by hearing this. Even the fifth canto, what is it? It's a description of the material world. But it's described there that you'll become purified by hearing this. And also I think there's a list of, Daksha's daughters, I think it is. Says, yeah, listen to this list of Daksha's daughters and it's purifying. I mean, wow, how is that going to purify me? Well, somehow. And then we hear also the Acharyas tell us, you know, actually in the Bhagavatam, it's like every word of the Bhagavatam is Krishna. It's all Krishna. So these are all different aspects of Krishna. And then you're asking about, you know, he only has 7 days left. You think, you know, he might, Pariksit Maharaj might get a little impatient, like, let's get to the 10th canto here, let's get some nectar here. But what's interesting is that often Pariksit Maharaj asks questions like that. He asks about, you know, well, can you tell me a little bit more about, you know, the universal form or this or that, or about the universe, the structure of the universe, these kinds of questions. Now, one reason, of course, we know that Pariksit Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami, they're Vaishnavas, so they're full of compassion. So there were a lot of people in the audience that weren't pure devotees. There were all kinds of people there. There were jnanis, yogis, and bhaktas there, and karma yogis, and so on. So not everyone was on the same level. So out of compassion for the other listeners. And Gopi Pranadan Prabhu makes an interesting point. He said, because someone may think, why is it all about the kings? And we're always hearing so much about the kings in the Bhagavatam. And he said, well, if you're just going to talk about sages, that's going to be pretty boring, because what do sages do? They just sit around and meditate and do puja all day long. So if you want some excitement, you want the, you know, the violence and the romance and everything, which you have actually in the Bhagavatam, then you have to have the kings, because the kings, you know, they do a lot of stuff. So the Bhagavatam is, that's sort of the structure of it, the framework. Of course, all the way through, we get Krishna consciousness. And of course, in the purports are there. And it always gets back to that. But I know, myself, sometimes I'm mystified. I'm thinking, gee, it doesn't seem like this. Why is this here? And, what, you know, the stories that are selected. Because going through these genealogies, you often think, well, gee, I'd kind of like to know about that one. But he didn't ask about that one. A little farther down the road, down the line, then he asks about this particular person. And sometimes it goes on for a long time. You get these long, long tangents. I don't know if I mentioned recently, in the beginning of the fourth canto, Maitreya and Vidura are speaking. So Vidura is asking questions of Maitreya. So he wants to, he heard something, he mentioned something about the Prachetas. Narada Muni, he says, Narada Muni told this story to the Prachetas. I think it's a story of Dhruva Maharaj. So after that, so Vidura said, when did Narada Muni meet with the Prachetas? So then Maitreya, when he starts talking, he goes back into the genealogy, and he goes through like 10 chapters. Tells the whole story of Prithu Maharaj, which is a real long story. And it's not till the very end of that, 10 or 12 chapters later, that he finally gets to answering his question about the Prachetas. So if one thing, I think, boy, Prithu Maharaj had a really good mind. He could remember this. It was a long tangent. He got back to the answer to his question. But another answer is that Sukadeva Goswami's, his own bhava, or his own ecstasy comes up. You know, his speech is his ecstasy. He's a pure devotee of Krishna. So what he is speaking is coming from his heart. So in some ways he's just, you know, he's giving this structure of history, which is all related to Krishna ultimately. Krishna's behind Krishna. I know the Christians, they like to use this phrase, they say, history is his story. So it's God's story ultimately. So he's telling this, but at the same time, he's inspired. So he, you might say, just out of his ecstasy, starts elaborating on things. And also the listener, Prithu Maharaj, he gets inspired by something, so he asks a question. So that gets elaborated on. Then they have to get back to it. Sort of like Prabhupada's classes are like that. If we listened to one this morning, and it was like Prabhupada was all over the place. He goes on this, but he usually brings it back, but he goes out and comes back, and he goes out and comes back, and so on. Why? Because he gets so excited about what he's talking about. He goes, starts talking about it. So this happens in the Bhagavatam too. It's Krishna. Krishna revealing himself, and he's revealing himself through the realization and the ecstasy of his pure devotees. So then this, we have to remember, the Bhagavatam is not an ordinary literary work. It's transcendental. It's part of the spiritual world. And it's also always growing. We know it started with Krishna speaking four verses, again, nutshell verses, which is the essence of what his point is. Then it expanded. And it was spoken at several times, which are mentioned in the Bhagavatam. And then we have it as 18,000, approximately 18,000 verses. And it's endless. You may know, and getting late, but I'll just mention this. In our early days, someone asked Prabhupada, is Joan of Arc in the Bhagavatam? And so then Prabhupada started asking a little something about her. And then he said, his answer was that the Bhagavatam is anything about Krishna. It's about, Bhagavatam literally means in relationship to God, Bhagavan or Bhagavata. So anything in relationship to God is the Bhagavatam in one sense. So we have it in a short, certain shape at this point, but there's so much more to it. So even this, you know, these genealogies are probably filled out even more in Brahmaloka. You can go there and hear even more stories and hear about more Krishna's incarnations. There's something like 30, I think it's 30, 30 incarnations of Krishna are mentioned, with actually telling their stories are told, at least part of their pastimes are told in the Bhagavatam. But Krishna has unlimited pastimes. We hear that he appears in every species of life. So the Bhagavatam is much more. It's unlimited, actually. So we can hear other parts of it when we go to other parts of Krishna's world, which is everything. We can hear more and more. All right, we started a little early today, so we'll stop now. It's been long. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.